Well, here we are.
It is time, Simba.
If you understand that reference, you might be about the age where we should be working together. It's possible. But it is now one of 3 times a year that I'm accepting clients for my freedom framework, overcoming food sensitivities and increasing energy without unnecessary restriction. My goal for my one-on-one clients is to take them through frameworks and explore tools for achieving 50, 80, 90% of their goals in just a few months and show them how to continue to heal on their own so they don't need me anymore. Honestly, I think we're doing great one-on-one work here, helping women that would otherwise be falling through the cracks, thinking that they're just aging, that they're just moms, that they just, and it may be true that they just have stress, when really those stress hormones and their other core systems just really need some serious support and some serious love to serve them for years to come without symptoms. So if you'd like to clear inflammation, eczema, food sensitivities, or improve energy and brain clarity, I'd love to chat with you. You can book a call with me at kristabigler.com/FSS, kristabigler.com/FSS, and that link will be in the show notes.
As we were preparing to release former Dr. Tom Cowan's episode on the human heart and cosmic heart, which was just sort of where our conversation organically led us, I wanted to give a little primer to this episode. So I found Tom from a list of authors. I was being pitched or emailed about a book from a certain author, and there was another list of authors. And Tom has some other topics I'm really curious about. You're not supposed to peg people as Enneagrams, but I would call Tom a strong Enneagram 8 or a challenger. He was just frustrated by being told how he should think and just kept questioning the current narrative, which led him down the rabbit holes he has arrived at. So it takes a minute. It's uncomfortable to have our narratives challenged. But in this episode, he very much challenges some of the things we often think about with heart health. And just like I mentioned in last week's episode, sometimes it's great to bring in other viewpoints and to expand our possible horizons or look at other viewpoints and opinions or to welcome those other than my own. I actually am hoping to have Tom back to talk about structured water after I wrap my head around that a bit, because I think he may offer a very different point around structured water that we've not had before. So enjoy this questioning, challenging approach to heart health from Tom Cowan.
I gotta get myself a little more faith, a little more love.
I'm your host, Krista Bigler, and I'm going to guess we have at least one thing in common, that we're both in pursuit of a less stressed life. On this show, I'll be interviewing experts and sharing clinical pearls from my years of practice to support high-performing, health-savvy women in pursuit of abundance and a less stressed life. One of my beliefs is that we always have options for getting the results we want. So let's see what's out there together.
I gotta get myself a little more faith.
All right. So today I have Tom Cowan. We've already done the introduction. We're going to jump right in. I hope it's okay. I'd love to talk to you about your story, because so often we start life, it goes this kind of typical way we think it should go. I was reading on your website and you bring this up a little bit, and then we start to learn more and then we're contented with what we're doing. And I feel like your story is a meandering partially of that topic. Will you tell us a little bit about how you got into some of the topics you're into now that we'll talk about today, between cancer, genomics, or the lack of structured water, et cetera? How did some of this come about?
Yeah, just as an interesting thing, why I don't like people calling me doctor. First of all, I'm not a practicing doctor anymore, and I gave up my license. But you know what the word doctor means?
I don't.
If I said, what would you do if you doctor a document?
Modify, edit, change it. Yes.
And in a nefarious way, right? If you doctor somebody's food, it's usually not a good thing.
Yeah, true.
So doctor means to change things in a nefarious way. And then think about curing. What does it mean to cure something like meat?
Age.
Preserve it.
Yeah.
So if a doctor says, I'm a doctor, I'm going to cure you of cancer, he means there's a nefarious guy who's going to preserve your cancer. So that's actually what it means.
Yeah.
So I was normal growing up. But I somehow didn't like medicine, and even though I was good in school and all that. And so I decided to try to do anything I could to figure out how not to be a doctor, but it didn't work. And then I realized that the kind of doctor I didn't like was not the only kind of doctor there was. And that allowed me to go to medical school. So I've been a renegade for 40 some years. And so essentially my whole career has been trying to figure out which part of this indoctrination, right? There's that word again, is actually true. And what's so interesting is that the longer and harder and better I look, the fewer and fewer things that I was indoctrinated to believe actually are true, at least as far as I can see.
Can you tell me, I want to understand, it sounds like someone was forcing you to medical school the way you brought that story up. Was there a story to that?
Only that I grew up, my father and grandfather were dentists. A lot of their friends were actually well-known doctors. One guy invented the laser for gynecology surgery. Another guy was essentially started immunotherapy for cancer. So these were the people that I played baseball with in the park on Sunday. Yeah. So I was, Tom, he's really good in school. Nobody said you have to be a doctor because I wouldn't have listened anyways.
It was understood.
Yeah, it was just in the vibe.
Okay, so you go to medical school and then were you practicing for a while before?
I had a general practice for 37 years.
For a while.
I saw everybody, and cancer patients, ear infections, everything, colds, flus, rheumatoid arthritis, what you name it. And I just kept trying to figure out what makes people sick and how do they get better? That's it. And with this little, I often say, because now I'm became known for a bunch of things, but there is no such thing as a virus, as an example. So I went into it, what I would say, not having a dog in this fight. Like, I didn't care if there was a virus or not. If you could convince me based on the evidence that there is and that they make you sick, fine. If not, that's fine too. A lot of people don't approach it like that. They either have a financial interest or more particularly an emotional. One of my first books was The Heart Doesn't Pump the Blood. And I spent 20 years looking at that. And I also realized that the process of logic, rational thinking, and science, and this is the key revelation in my life, was that you don't have to know what is true to know what isn't. That science is a series of claims. The heart pumps the blood, right? The heart is a pressure propulsion device that causes the blood to move in our bodies. That's the claim. So then you can investigate the claim, and you may never know what actually makes the blood move. I think I do, actually. But even if I don't, it doesn't mean that the heart pumps the blood. And I have a lot of examples of that where that's the process of science trying to validate or invalidate claims. You don't need another explanation for why somebody gets sick. What I found is that if you do that properly, will actually lead you, if you stay open or what I call in a state of wonder, you will start learning why people actually do get sick or what makes the blood move, et cetera. But that's not where you start. You start by so-called debunking claims. And that's what I spent my life doing.
So I think your first book is called something like Conscious Heart.
No.
Will you tell me what the name of it is?
Human Heart, Cosmic Heart.
There you go.
The first book was called The Fourfold Path to Healing. That was 25 years ago, about a path involving thinking and emotions and movement and food. Those are the four paths. And then we wrote it, The Nourishing Traditions of Baby and Child Care, about children and like the books. And then came three books, Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, Vaccines and Autoimmunity, and Cancer and the New Biology of Water.
Huge topics.
And then recently the book called The Contagion Myth, which is that there's no such thing as contagious illness.
All right. I don't know how we're going to accomplish all these tasks today, Tom, but we're going to try. And you can redirect me. So when Human Heart, Cosmic Heart, what was the reason you wrote the book? Let me try it that way, because the claim is that the heart pumps the blood, and you would say that claim is maybe true, but you don't have to know it's true if you can.
No, that claim is not true. It's easy to demonstrate.
Okay.
So that book looked at two claims. One is the heart pumps the blood, or more technically, the heart acts as a pressure propulsion device, propelling the blood because of the mechanical squeezing of the heart. That's what we're taught and told. And the second is the predominant, almost exclusive reason for heart attacks is blocked arteries. We have three coronary arteries and they get blocked with plaque and the blood can't get through and then you die of a heart attack. You have a heart. So I looked at that claim and found out that neither of those are true. The heart is not a pressure pulsion device and blocked arteries have little, if anything, to do with what we call heart attacks.
Can we make a, I'm trying to think of how to ask this question because I feel like I'm trying to reverse engineer the questions. Was the purpose to disprove that heart attacks were caused by clogged arteries? Are there many reasons that happens? And what are your thoughts about what does cause the heart to pump? I think you brought that up earlier.
Okay. So just to be clear on what we're doing here, we should look at one of those claims, the heart pumps the blood, and see if that's true. And only then say, okay, if that's not true, then how does the blood move? And then if you want, we could say, okay, what is the evidence that blocked arteries or plaque in the arteries causes heart attacks? Why is that important? Because we have an approximately $100 billion a year industry unblocking people's arteries, stents, yes, statins, cord bypasses, et cetera. It's the number one moneymaker for most hospitals in the United States. There was a recent study in The Lancet 2018 showing $50 billion worth of stents per year, showing no benefit from stents. They don't prolong life. They don't prevent further heart attacks. And for the first time ever, they did essentially a blinded study. So they took people with chest pain. They did a stent in half. The other half, they put a catheter in, told them they did a stent, but didn't. And they had the same amount of chest pain 6 weeks later. Let's get into that one first, because it's a big deal for people. So the way I got into this, it's basically simple logic. Sometimes it helps if I ask you, just so I'm clear you're with me, okay? So the claim is you have these three major coronary arteries. Essentially, all the blood to your heart goes through those three vessels. And if one gets significantly blocked with plaque, and there's a whole lot of conversation about why you get plaque, is it inflammation, is it cholesterol, is it this? That's not the issue here. Whatever causes the plaque, of which you can see, does that cause the heart attack? That's the claim. So the first thing I thought of was, because I was also an ER doctor for 10 years, so I saw a lot of people with heart attacks. So I had a lot of time to question them. So I say to myself, okay, are the blood vessels, the arteries, the same everywhere in the body, right? In other words, your coronary arteries made of the same thing as the splenic artery, carotid artery, hepatic artery. What do you think?
I would just guess, yes.
Yes, that's a good, because we don't have a special artery for our heart. Okay, so there's something depositing in those arteries. Next question, is the blood the same?
Yes.
The blood that goes through your heart and your spleen and your liver and your brain, it's the same, right? Okay. So if the blood is depositing something in the arteries, which are the same, then you would probably get plaque all over your body. If it's too much cholesterol, too much inflammation, too much infection, there's a lot of theories on the plaque, right? So you get plaque in your spleen artery, plaque in your liver artery, plaque in your coronary arteries, et cetera. Okay. Do you know of anybody or heard of anybody who's ever had a heart attack?
Yes.
How about a spleen attack? Never. I've asked over 100,000 people by now and been in ERs, et cetera. Nobody I know ever had a spleen attack or knows anybody. How come? It's just one artery to your spleen. It gets plaque. Why do you get a spleen heart attack, not a spleen attack?
Yeah.
Or a liver attack or a kidney attack or a foot attack or any other attack?
Yeah, I have no idea.
I didn't either. Nobody told me why. But I thought, that's strange. If it's just plaque, why not spleen attacks? So then I started hearing stories, and a lot of them went like this. I was a normal 50-year-old guy, walked up a hill with my wife. I started having a little chest pain. Wife got nervous, told me I had to go to the cardiologist. Cardiologist does some tests and eventually does an angiogram where they stick the dye, and they say, and they usually wag your finger, you have a 93% blockage. If you block anymore, you're going to have a heart attack.
I heard this story like 3 days ago.
Yeah, you hear it. I heard it hundreds of times, maybe thousands. Now let's think about that. All the blood goes through your coronary arteries, right? You got one of them. So one of the areas, major areas to your heart, has 7% blood flow, right?
Yes.
How'd you walk up that hill?
The other arteries.
They don't go to that part of the heart.
I don't know, with the 7% blood flow, with the oxygen, I have no idea.
Yeah, I have no idea either. And you, not you, but the cardiologist, you mean to tell me that if I block from 7% down to what, 6% or 4%, that's going to kill me? That made no sense. If you got 7% blood flow, you got no blood flow. And I don't know how you walked up that hill. So that didn't make any sense to me either. Now, I'm just using my, what I'm told, investigating those claims. So then I go to the literature and looked at every single autopsy study since 1930, when they started in 1940 with this coronary artery theory. And the first thing I found out was most cardiologists didn't believe it. In fact, they said the people with the plaque get less heart attacks than the people who don't have plaque. Okay? So then they did autopsies to prove it. In other words, somebody dies of a heart attack. They cut open their arteries, see how many of them had significant plaque. The numbers that I found were a low of 18%, which means 82% of people who died of heart attacks, that's the worst of the worst, had no plaque of any significance. And the highest number I found was 78%, which still means 22% didn't have any plaque of any significance. So why did they die? Now, then I found that there's the best study ever done by a guy named Giorgio Baroldi, Italian pathologist, looks for 40 years, does autopsies on everybody who died of a heart attack, says exactly 41% of the people had significant plaque, of which over half came after the heart attack, not before. In other words, the best information we have is that only 80% even have plaque of any significance who die of a heart attack, which means what happened to those other 80%? Nobody ever said anything. All my medical training, any cardiology, it was all about the plaque and blocked arteries. So that made me conclude that there is actually no evidence that blocked arteries cause heart attack.
It makes sense.
The numbers don't add up.
Yeah.
So then I tried to figure out, so what does cause a heart attack and why does the plaque happen after? And that takes a little bit longer, but basically, and why the heart and not the spleen? So it turns out the heart is the most metabolically active organ, uses the most energy, which they say is ATP, but turns out it isn't. ATP has nothing to do with energy, but that's a different story. It uses the most energy, and it's the most likely to go to do this so-called glycolytic shift, which means it goes anaerobic and starts fermenting instead of respiring, right? Usually you use oxygen, although it turns out we don't actually breathe in oxygen, but that's a whole nother story. We make energy through oxidative phosphorylation, but if we haven't exceed our capacity or have some event happen or something, if we run too much, our leg goes anaerobic, it ferments, builds up lactic acid, we get a cramp, which hurts, and then we stop running. Same thing happens in the heart, except it's much more likely to do. Lactic acid builds up because of this fermentation. You get a drop in the pH. That causes cramps, just like your leg. Same thing happens in your spleen, except your spleen and your leg and your liver can stop and your heart can't. It's not pushing, but it's expanding and contracting. And so it can't stop. And so the lactic acid builds up. You go acidotic. That creates a necrosis or a breakdown of the tissue. And that's what we call a heart attack. And then the blood can't go through that dead tissue. So it's like a river that's been dammed and you get debris buildup upstream of the dam, which is why you get all of the coronary artery blockages happen after the damage, not before, just like Baroldi found.
Can I ask a question? Are you?
Yeah. And by the way, the benefit of that is it turns out there's a very simple herbal medicine that gets rid of the lactic acid as it's building up in your heart. It has been used almost with amazing success for over 100 years, except they don't like it. to prevent heart attacks, even in hospitals. And all it does is get rid of the lactic acid, because that was the central, essentially, poison in this drama. So now stop.
What is the, ask you next, what the herb is?
Strophanthus is called.
You spell that?
Nobody ever heard of it, but we have resurrected it as a medicine because it clears the lactic acid, converts it into something called pyruvate, which goes into the so-called oxidative phosphorylation cycle. I don't like to think in these sort of biochemistry terms, but that's, it also helps the parasympathetic nervous system. A lot of the reason why your heart loses energy is because it's under too much so-called sympathetic tone, so to speak.
Strophanthus, is that what you said?
Strophanthus, yes.
It was an, I don't know if you mentioned this. Was this popular in a particular culture? How did you learn about the herb?
It was part of the German naturopathic circles that I frequented for a while. It was used in American medicine for decades. And there's even what's called a Strophanthus challenge test. If you had heart chest pain, you want to know if it was your heart, they give you Strophanthus. If it went away, it was your heart. If it wasn't, if it didn't, it was something else. And I knew they got rid of it because they wanted this coronary artery theory, which has essentially made them a fortune.
Okay, I have a couple of questions. We're talking about lactic acid buildup. And this makes me think of the story I was listening to this week about someone presenting with a lot of blockage, right? The story you've heard hundreds of thousands of times. But the piece of the story I want to clarify that I'm unsure of where it fits in as you laid that out is that this person, his only symptom was that he was short of breath doing his everyday things, right? Animals or whatever. So then he goes in, has this blockage, has surgery, blah, 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 right? I think this all fits together. Can you speak to shortness of breath and that symptom presenting or someone?
There could be a lot of reasons for that. One of the things I've learned in my career is that not only do viruses not exist, and the disease categories we have learned don't exist either. People have individual stories, and you'd have to know the whole story. Talk about that generically. If your heart is dysfunctional, you have a metabolic disturbance, which means that you're not able to generate energy. And one of the repercussions of that could be shortness of breath. And it also gets into the whole thing of what is the evidence that we actually absorb oxygen from the air, which is what we're told. And there's very clear evidence that cannot be possible. What we absorb from the air, and actually from oxygen, which doesn't, one of the paradoxes of the absorption of oxygen story, because that's what it is. The air is 78% nitrogen, 21% oxygen, and then 1% trace element, right? Now, if you breathe the air in, it's got to go through the alveolar membrane and then the capillary membrane, the red blood cell membranes. That's three membranes attached to the hemoglobin in the red blood cell. We're told that. Now, here's what's interesting about that story. We say there's this dissolved gas, oxygen, or this free gas. That's even a better free gas in the air that goes through those three membranes. But if you look at it, nitrogen, which is 78%, which nobody says gets absorbed. In fact, you can measure the oxygen, the nitrogen in is 78%, oxygen out is 78%. How do you keep nitrogen, which is smaller, they say, than oxygen, from absorbing through those same three membranes? Or as I like to say, you've got a door that's meant to keep elephants out. How do you keep the mosquitoes out too?
Yeah, I have no idea.
The door is too small. It's obviously the membrane windows or absorption or whatever that is, supposedly allowing oxygen in, is oxygen is bigger than nitrogen. How does that happen? It's the same problem as switching subjects. They say we got this DNA in our nucleus, right? DNA in the nucleus makes mRNA in the nucleus. It goes from the nucleus, which has a membrane, you can see it, into the cytoplasm and gets translated into protein, right? That's what we're told. You can put a probe in the cytoplasm and the nucleus, and the pH at the same time is different. Repeatable, you can measure it again and again. Every single cell, pH in the nucleus is different than the pH in the cytoplasm. We're told the pH is because of hydrogen ion, right? If they're different, that must mean because they don't equilibrate across the nuclear membrane. Otherwise, the pH would be the same. And mRNA is, let's just put a number, a million times bigger than a hydrogen. So how does the mRNA get out of the nucleus without letting the hydrogen ion in?
I have no idea.
Neither does anybody else. It's the how do you have a door that keeps the elephants, lets the elephant go out, but doesn't let the mosquitoes in? Here's the only possible answer.
If you're urinating a lot when you're drinking water, maybe you're not actually hydrating that much, or in other words, getting the fluid and nutrients into the cell. Electrolytes are minerals that help fluid and nutrients get into the cell. I recommend all of my clients start by drinking electrolytes when we begin our work together to improve energy. And then we get even more strategic with our electrolyte recommendations as test results come in. Now, generally, electrolytes are potassium, sodium, and chloride. One of my favorite electrolyte products is Pickleball Cocktail from Jigsaw Health because it's one of the only products you can get with an adequate dose of potassium to meet my recommendations, which is critical for blood sugar, which everyone should care about, hormone health, and digestion. Huge thing for relapsing digestive issues. Jigsaw Health is also maker of the famous Adrenal Cocktail, made popular by the pro-metabolic corner of the internet and Root Cause Protocol, as well as a multi-mineral electrolyte for recovery called Electrolyte Supreme. You can get a discount on all of Jigsaw's amazing products, including Pickleball, Electrolyte Supreme, and Adrenal Cocktail at jigsawhealth.com with the code LessStressed10. That's three S's, LessStressed10.
That's not possible. So they have these things, which if you examine the claim, simply can't be possible. But we need oxygen, right? Because if you don't have oxygen, you die. But oxygen donates electrons. And electrons freely pass through membranes. Although, turns out electrons don't really exist either. But they're electronegative charges. And we're breathing oxygen, but we're getting electronegative charges. And when we don't have enough of those, we feel short of breath. So that's what's happening to that person. And those electronegative charges deficiency is essentially the metabolic reason why his heart is dysfunctional. So that's why he's got those two symptoms.
This reminds me of the studies that Dr. Jerry Tennant sent to
a
little bit.
Right. We are electromagnetic organisms. We're not a chemistry. And they keep trying to tell us, oh, it's all about chemicals and all that. It's not. And when you just look at the claim, okay, this is bigger than this, it should go through the membrane. And it doesn't. You can prove it doesn't. They even say it doesn't. Nitrogen doesn't get absorbed. How do you do that? How does the body know? They don't have any answer because it doesn't happen like that.
Now that I'm thinking about the topics that you have books on, I'm starting to see the potential power around energy or electromagnetic force, potentially, right? Because that's what I think about with structured water a little bit, which is another thing. Let me ask you this as well. How does heart coherence play into this topic?
That's what you mean by heart coherence.
Yeah, true, right. I think that may have been I'm not sure. I feel like that term is widely accepted in some places and not others. And I'm not sure if it's because HeartMath coined the term.
Right. They don't define it, so nobody knows what you're talking about.
Yeah. Parasympathetic, sympathetic balance. But I'm not sure. I think that's an incorrect term as well.
You're already too down the stream. You got to go back up the stream. What does the heart do? Just to give you an example. So the heart pumps the blood. So you got this. If you look at a flow chart, velocity of the blood moving into the heart, it's the same approximately as the blood exiting the heart. Right. So you got this blood moving, goes through the heart, exits, same velocity. Then it goes down through the arteries, arterioles, capillaries, and it stops, right? It's got to offload gas or charges and food to the tissues like your leg, and then it gets going again. So think about that. You got a water moving fast, same speed, slows down, stops, gets going again. Where do you put the pump? Yeah, you do. If you put it where it stopped.
Yeah. It just doesn't make any sense in my head. It doesn't make sense that a pump would be in the foot. So it doesn't. I'm like,
that's not what I'm doing. That's where it's got to be because it stopped. And the only sense of a pump. And if the blood isn't moving faster, what did it do to the blood?
If the blood isn't moving faster, what
it's the same speed going in as coming out. What's the sense of having a pump when the moving water coming in to your pump is already going fast?
Are you now, saying that the blood doesn't slow down?
It slows down when it stops at the Kepler. I tell people it's like you have a bus from San Francisco to New York and it stops in St. Louis. And I'm not getting on the bus unless the bus has an engine in St. Louis because I'm stuck in St. Louis.
Yeah.
So you got to put the engine in the bus at St. Louis, even if it's down the hill, because if it's going to keep going and it stopped to offload passengers and luggage and stuff, you got to get going again. You got to put the pump at your foot and your liver and your leg, et cetera. So what's the pump? But here's another thing. When you look at the aortic arch, so this is visual, right? You can see. So yes. You got this artery coming out of the heart like McDonald's arch, like this. So imagine you have a spigot off your hose, off your house, and you have a garden hose that's an arch. You turn the hose off, the spigot off, the hose arches, it's an arch. Then you turn it on full blast, right? Because you have to pump this blood. The length of the artery of the blood circulates, the blood vessels, it's like tens of thousands of miles if you laid them end to end. So that's a hell of a pump. Got to push really hard. So you turn the spigot on really hard and you got this flexible garden hose like this. What's it going to do? Straighten.
Okay. Yeah.
So no flow. It goes like this. Turn it on really fast. Goes like that. And if you don't believe me, take a garden hose and see what happens. Okay, so you got the aortic arch, push really hard because you got to go 10,000 miles. And what happens? It goes in. That's goofy.
Yeah.
And when I was in college, I worked in a cardiac cath lab and you'd squirt the dye in, you'd see it come out. Every time there was systole, the aortic arch would compress in. You can see it. And I said, that doesn't make any sense because if you push really, you got 10,000 pounds of pressure going through there because you got to go all the way around. You have to go all the way around the body. You have to get it to stop. And then the same push has to get it going again. That's not possible.
Yeah. So I'm still trying to understand what the pump is in the foot.
Okay.
I'm still trying to make it tangible in my brain.
I will. So it goes like this. And they said, that's just the way it does. I said, I know that's the way it does. I can see it. That means it's a suction, not a push. Okay. So what's the pump? If you take a beaker of water, Jerry Pollack did this experiment. You suspend a horizontal hydrophilic tube in it, okay, with me, by threads or wires. And so there's water in the beaker, the tube, the hydrophilic tube. It will form a gel layer inside the tube. Just the interaction of water, hydrophilic charged protein. Always does that mean it's a gel layer like Jell-O. So that's the so-called fourth phase of water. It's not ice. It's not liquid. It's not steam. It's Jell-O. Which phase is that? It's not any of those three. And you can see it. And that gel layer is always negatively charged, which means it pushes the positive charges into the liquid water in the center of the tube. You with me? Two, gel layer lining the tube.
Yeah.
Liquid water in the center. That's like a capillary. Hydrophilic tube interacting with the liquid in the blood, forming a gel layer that protects it. And then the blood is liquid. So that has these positive charges in it. The positive charges repel each other, start the blood moving. And that movement, that repulsion, electromagnetic charge repulsion, gets the blood moving. And then because the tubes go from tiny to bigger, they compress the surface area like a river going from a wetland to a river, and that makes it go faster and faster. Mm.
It's simple. It's electric.
It's simple Bernoulli's principle of how water moves. So you compress the total volume, and that makes the blood go faster. So that pump is the charge that's created because of tubes interacting with water. Now, here's the beauty of that way of thinking. You could say, so you can measure the velocity of the water moving in the tube, and that tells you the intensity or the strength of the gel, right? Bigger gel, more charge, faster velocity. Okay?
Yes.
So you put the beaker in a lead box, stops moving. You put the beaker in the sun, starts moving fast. You put the beaker on the earth, starts moving fast. You put your hands on it, like laying on of hands. There's an electromagnetic charge from the palm of our hands, gets the blood to the water to move faster. You put your dog next to it, at least most dogs, starts moving faster. Here's how you get it to stop. Put your cell phone next to the beaker, stop moving. Why? Because you've interfered with the ability of that gel to form, because the charge from the radiation device called your cell phone interfered with that. The gel can't form, no movement. Why do you get congestive heart failure? That means the blood can't move up your body. That's because you ruined your charge. No sun, no earth, no physical touch, stupid thoughts, and you spend all your time with your cell phone.
That makes more sense. And it makes me, all I can come up with is more and more questions, which to be continued on structured water conversation, because I think it might make sense with you explaining it. But you know, it makes me think about what we know or the claim around a diabetic neuropathy and damage to vessels. And I might just be getting too downstream again. It makes me think about that and I don't know, just thinking about how that plays.
Diabetics have essentially, here's another interesting thing. They say heart attacks are from a blockage in your major coronary arteries. We already went. Yeah. Diabetics don't have disease of blood vessels. They have disease of the capillaries.
Yeah.
They have more heart attacks. Why? They don't have more plaque.
Because they have damaged capillaries, which
the capillaries are where the flow happens.
Yeah.
So then the world starts making sense. You got no flow. You have a damaged, that's the cause of your heart starving for fuel. And by the way, the reason they have neuropathy is nerves don't have synapses. They say they do. They don't work by neurotransmitters. They say they do, but they don't. And it's easy to show that you can't possibly have a synapse in a nerve, even though that is neurology 101. A nerve, the reason I know that is too fast, right? If you say, how long does it take for between when I say wiggle your finger, when you hear it and wiggle it, it's instant, right? If you think about impulse crossing the synapse, next nerve, cross the synapse, release the chemicals, that can't possibly be instant. And you will never see an actual picture of a synapse because they don't exist. The way they get synapse, the idea was they dehydrate nerves, they break apart, and they say that's a synapse. So if you know that a nerve is just structured water, which has a charge, you can see this charges flow instantaneous, right? That's why you flip your switch on down the hall, it goes immediately. And if you ruin the charge, because that's your disease, then you got neuropathy.
So,
the world starts to make sense.
Right. I'm actually just thinking in my brain.
How do you know it's your brain?
I was wondering if you find yourself frustrated a lot by everything you know is upside down. And then what you do with this information. Let's talk about...
I think it's mostly funny.
Yeah, that works. That works for me too. So I'd love to talk more about structured water, which I'm running low on time today. I would love to hear about, I think you've talked about this, but let's summarize. When you think about answers for heart conditions or life, the condition of life or disease, what are the solutions that you think about? You brought up nature.
Get in the sun, throw your cell phone in the nearest forest or river, although that's not so good for the forest or river. Get your feet on the earth, move, eat good food, have good relations. And if you've got any traumas in your life or emotional blockages, investigate what happened and see if you can do something about it.
I want to ask you this last question. This is going to open a can of worms, but I like to think about this topic about emotions stored in the body. And have you spent a lot of time on this topic?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Another topic for another day. Thank you so much for coming on today. I feel like we barely got started. Where can people find you if they want to learn more about yourself?
Mostly drtomcowan.com, drtomcowan.com.
Perfect. Thanks so much for walking us slowly through debunking the concept of heart things. And I hope you come back and talk about structured water and emotions stored in the body another day.
All right. Take care.
Thanks so much.